Imagine, just for a second, migrating like two-thirds of your entire global customer service volume to an AI assistant.
I mean, that genuinely breaks most traditional models of scaling.
Right, because we were talking about 2.3 million customer conversations here.
Yeah, and not over a decade. Over a matter of weeks, which is just unprecedented.
It really sounds like science fiction, but you know, that is the actual public reality for Klarna.
Right, they actually pulled this off.
They did, and the business metrics are exactly what you would expect from a massive AI migration. Huge headcount optimization, faster resolution times, and a massive boost to their margins.
Yeah, it has basically become the ultimate corporate success story for the AI era. You see the headlines everywhere.
You do, but well, those are just the PR metrics.
Exactly. Whenever a company points to a shiny, flawless AI deployment, there is always this enormous, often frantic amount of hidden architecture making it possible.
Which the AI usually takes all the credit for.
Right. The AI takes the credit for some very heavy, unglamorous engineering work happening backstage.
Well, today, for this deep dive, we got our hands on a really fascinating advisory deck from Surya Kasamba.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, Kasamba is a principal consultant at the AI Operator, specializing in regulated AI and fintech architecture.
And this case study completely pulls back the curtain on how a system like this actually functions in the real world.
Exactly our mission today. We are going straight past those PR metrics to understand the operational reality. Because, I mean, let's just unpack the obvious danger here.
It's the big one.
Giving a generative AI access to millions of live bank accounts, credit limits, and dispute systems, it sounds like an absolute recipe for disaster.
Oh, absolutely.
So how are they doing this without triggering a total regulatory catastrophe?
You are hitting on the core tension of modern tech right there. Deploying what we call non-deterministic language models into a highly audited consumer finance environment introduces critical existential risks.
I want to pause on that term, actually, non-deterministic, because traditional software is deterministic, right?
Right. It does exactly what it's programmed to do.
Like, if I ask my banking app for my checking account balance, it queries a database and spits out a number.
Yes, and it does it the exact same way every single time.
But an AI doesn't work like that at all. It generates text by, you know, predicting the next most likely word based on probabilities. It kind of has a fluid mind of its own.
It does. And if you just plug a raw language model directly into your customer service pipeline and let it run wild, you are opening the door to severe financial hallucinations.
Which is terrifying.
Imagine the AI confidently telling a customer, yes, your $1,000 debt is completely forgiven.
Oh, wow. Just because the customer phrased their question in a really persuasive way.
Exactly. You risk data sovereignty violations, massive compliance breakdowns, and literally millions of dollars in liability.
Which brings us to the core thesis of this entire case study. Kasanga points out that the true breakthrough here isn't actually about making the AI itself smarter.
Right, or more perfect.
Yeah, the breakthrough is entirely structural. It requires wrapping those flexible, non-deterministic intelligence layers inside hardened, deterministic engineering rails.
It represents a total paradigm shift. I mean, a lot of companies are burning billions trying to train the smartest, most flawless AI possible.
Just hoping it naturally behaves itself.
Right. Hoping it just acts right. But this architecture argues that success in high-risk environments isn't about the AI's inherent perfection at all. It's about the inescapable programmatic cages you build around it.
I love this concept of the cage. It's like hiring a brilliant, highly creative improv actor to be a bank teller.
That is a great way to look at it.
You want their amazing conversational skills to talk to the customer. You want them to be polite and adaptable when someone is upset, but you absolutely cannot let them improvise the account balances.
Or the interest rates, or the bank's core policies.
Yeah.
That analogy holds up perfectly.
Right.
You need the conversational fluidity of the improv actor, but you demand the mathematical rigidity of a calculator.
So how do you do that?
Well, the way they force that improv actor to stick to the script is through a very specific setup called a hierarchical multi-agent collaborative framework.
Okay, that is a mouthful. Let's break down how this cage is actually constructed.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm an angry customer. I call in and I spend 20 minutes arguing about a disputed charge, and I bring in like three other unrelated
A
topics.
classic customer service nightmare.
Exactly. How do you stop this AI improv actor from just getting confused and breaking character?
You start by ensuring the AI isn't just one big omniscient megabrain trying to handle the whole 20 minutes at once. The system breaks the AI down into highly specialized layers.
Okay.
The first layer is just the intent routing layer.
The case study notes they use a low latency pipeline for this, right? Something incredibly fast, like an optimized 4-mini model.
Right. And its only job is to parse what the user wants, extract the basic data, and immediately hand the conversation off.
That's its entire existence.
Its entire existence. It listens to your vent, strips away the emotion, figures out if you want to check a balance, dispute a fee, or, you know, reschedule a payment.
And then
it routes that programmatic state to the next layer down the domain-specific experts.
So these are isolated sub-agents that only handle tightly scoped tasks.
Exactly.
So if the user wants to dispute a charge, the router sends them to the dispute expert agent.
Yes, and that specific agent knows literally nothing about rescheduling payments or updating addresses.
It creates a firewall.
It does. This strict isolation prevents cross-context contamination. The AI dealing with your refund doesn't even have the tools to accidentally mess up your payment schedule.
Let's expand our analogy here, because this is where the architecture really clicks for me. It's a restaurant.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, think about it. The intent routing layer is your front of house host. You walk in, you complain about the weather, and you say you want a table, and you're in the mood for seafood.
Right, the host doesn't cook the food.
Exactly. They just parse your intent and seat you. Then the domain-specific experts are your specialist line cooks.
One cook only makes the fish. One only makes the steak.
They don't cross over. But here is the problem. In a 20-minute conversation, to make sure the waiter doesn't forget your complicated order halfway through the meal, there has to be a system to remember everything.
And memory over a long, winding conversation is actually one of the biggest failure points in modern AI.
Why is that?
Well, if you ask an AI to remember every single word of a 20-minute chat, you get token bloat.
Token bloat.
Yeah. The AI's working memory gets so stuffed with text that it slows to a crawl and becomes incredibly expensive to run.
Right.
Worse, you get context drift. The AI literally starts to forget what you said 5 minutes ago, or it hallucinates and mashes two different problems together.
And the solution mapped out here is fascinating. They don't rely on the AI's memory at all.
No, they don't.
They completely separate the AI's context window from the actual session state. The conversational state, like the hard facts of what has been agreed upon, is synchronized externally to a high-availability Redis cluster.
Using strictly typed JSON schemas, yes.
So taking it back to your restaurant, the Redis cluster is the master ticket rail in the kitchen.
Yes. Every time you say something important, it gets written down as a strict, formatted ticket on that rail using JSON.
Which is just a standard, rigid text format for storing data.
Exactly. The worker agents, our AI line cooks, are instantiated with blank, stateless brains every single time it's their turn to speak.
They don't remember the last 20 minutes.
Not at all. The system just dynamically grabs the verified state from the ticket rail and hands it to the AI for that specific microsecond.
Wow. What this means for your daily workflows or any system you rely on is that it guarantees absolute transactional integrity.
It really does. Even if the underlying LLM call completely drops, or the server crashes for a second.
Or if a line cook faints on the line.
Right, the ticket isn't lost. The state of the conversation is safely locked away in a deterministic external database, not floating around in the volatile memory of an improv actor.
It's incredibly elegant. But okay, building this massive multi-agent restaurant with millions of tickets moving around every week introduces a glaring real-world problem.
The cost.
Running complex queries through advanced AI models is notoriously expensive. How does a company afford to run 2.3 million conversations through this multi-layered architecture without just wiping out the margins they're trying to save?
That requires aggressive financial engineering. The advisory deck outlines a highly optimized dynamic routing and semantic caching matrix,
which is specifically designed to manage the true cost of AI at scale.
Right, and Kausanga warns very strongly against falling into what is called the all-frontier model trap.
An all-frontier model meaning you use the absolute biggest, most advanced, and most expensive AI models on the market.
Like GPT-5 or Claude 4.5.
For every single interaction. Now, I have to push back here. I don't totally get this. If I'm managing a financial institution, dealing with people's actual money and credit scores, I want the absolute smartest AI possible handling every single query just so I can sleep at night.
That's a common thought.
Why would I risk routing a customer to a cheaper, less capable AI? Isn't that cutting corners on safety?
It feels counterintuitive, I know.
Yeah.
But Using the smartest model for everything is actually a massive operational liability, not just a financial one.
How so?
Well, why would you boot up a multi-million dollar supercomputer just to answer the question, what day is my payment due? That's a complete waste of compute. According to the data, running an all-frontier pipeline costs between 10 and 16 cents per interaction.
And multiply 16 cents by 2.3 million conversations, and you are burning hundreds of thousands of dollars just to tell people what a late fee is.
Precisely. So they reserve those heavy, expensive frontier models purely for complex reasoning.
Things like legal dispute arbitration.
Right. Contract reviews and high-stakes manual underwriting overrides. For the vast majority of interactions, they use a routed model pipeline.
They send the simple tasks down to smaller, faster flash models, bringing the cost down to around 2 cents an interaction.
But the real magic trick in their financial engineering isn't just using smaller models.
Right.
It's the optimized cache layer, semantic caching. This is the mechanism that makes the whole system financially viable.
The architecture sets a, quote, Redis similarity threshold of greater than or equal to 0.96.
Right.
When a customer query hits that threshold, the cost drops to a fraction of a penny. And standard queries are served instantly out of memory in under 50 milliseconds with zero LLM token consumption.
Zero.
Zero. How is the system answering complex questions without consuming a single AI token?
It goes much further than just answering efficiently. It prevents the AI from even waking up.
Wait, really?
Yes. Semantic caching relies on vector mathematics. Every question a customer asks is translated into mathematical coordinates.
Okay, so like, how do I update my billing address? And where do I change my mailing location?
Exactly. They use completely different words, but semantically, they mean the same thing.
So they land in the exact same mathematical neighborhood.
Yes. If the system's vector database recognizes that the mathematical meaning of your question has a 96% similarity match to a question it already answered an hour ago, it doesn't bother sending the prompt to the language model.
It just instantly retrieves the pre-approved, previously generated answer from its memory.
It's not generating text. It's literally just fetching a file.
It bypasses the AI entirely.
That is how you achieve blistering sub-50 millisecond response times and drive your token cost to absolute zero for high-volume, repetitive support queries.
You only pay for the AI to think the very first time a question is asked.
Exactly.
Okay, this idea of memory and fetching files brings us to a critical pivot point in this deep dive.
That's a big one.
If the AI is constantly answering questions about specific customer accounts, if it is discussing my name, my purchase history, my exact bank balance, how does it know all of those deeply personal details without permanently learning them?
And accidentally leaking your balance to the next customer.
Yes. That would be disastrous.
It touches on one of the most dangerous misconceptions in enterprise AI. It's what Kalsanga calls the fine-tuning trap.
I see this everywhere. Every tech blog, every LinkedIn thought leader claims that fine-tuning your own custom model on your proprietary corporate data is the holy grail.
Well, they do.
You feed your internal data into the model so it naturally knows everything about your business. But this case study explicitly calls fine-tuning an anti-pattern for financial data.
The thought leaders are missing a crucial technical nuance. Fine-tuning is brilliant for teaching an AI a certain tone of voice or the general formatting rules of your industry.
Okay.
But teaching an AI a static, highly sensitive number, like a customer's specific bank balance by baking it into the model's core neural weights, is incredibly dangerous.
The advisory deck notes that, quote, parametric memory is lossy, unstable, and ungrounded.
Let's translate lossy. The AI's internal brain isn't a spreadsheet. When it learns a fact through fine-tuning, it doesn't lock it in a neat little cell.
Right. It kind of fuzzes that fact together with the billions of other things it knows.
Think of parametric memory like a highly compressed JPEG image. Every time you save it, you lose a little bit of the sharp edges.
Yeah.
An LLM stores facts as mathematical probabilities.
Yeah.
If it learns through fine-tuning that your balance is $512, that number gets blended into the static.
So later, it might confidently tell you your balance is $502 simply because 502 appeared more often in its training data next to the word dollars.
It hallucinates the math. So the absolute golden rule is that you must never inject customer balances, interest rates, or transaction variables into the model's training weights.
Never. Instead, you use what they call the production pattern, dynamic injection.
Which is also known as a hybrid RAG architecture, retrieval augmented generation.
So rather than the AI knowing your balance deep in its artificial soul, the AI is treated as a total blank slate.
Always.
every single time it needs to speak to you, a completely separate deterministic system retrieves your real-time ledger information.
Right, and the deck mentions this is done via strongly typed APIs written in Python or Rust.
And secured by Oath 2.0.
Which is vital. Oath 2.0 is the industry standard protocol for secure, token-based authorization. It means the system is performing a rigorous digital handshake to verify exactly who is asking for the data before it retrieves a single number.
And once that data is pulled, it creates an immutable prompt context contract for the AI.
Yes.
I want to read the exact system prompt constraint provided in the case study because this shows just how aggressive the cage around our improv actor really is.
Go for it.
The hidden prompt says, if account object payload does not explicitly state overdue balances, you are strictly prohibited from mentioning fees. Return system error 404 ledger mismatch if any balance fields are null.
That is a masterclass in strict negative guardrails.
It really is.
The AI isn't just told to be helpful. It is given a highly restricted, read-only contract to the user's data for that exact microsecond in time.
So if a single variable from the database is missing or null,
the system is hard-coded to forcibly shut the AI down and throw a systemic error, rather than letting the AI try to guess or politely hallucinate a response to keep the conversation going.
It's remarkable discipline, but, you know, even with these strict prompts, even with the hierarchical routing and the caching, we are still talking about heavily regulated consumer finance.
Sure.
What happens when things inevitably go wrong? Because people will absolutely try to break this. Malicious users will attack the system, or regulatory auditors from the government will demand to see how it works.
Risk, governance, and human fail-safes are completely non-negotiable in this tier of deployment.
Right.
The case study features a regulatory mapping matrix that aligns these architectures with two very serious pieces of oversight. The first is SR 11-7.
Which is the guidance on model risk management from the Federal Reserve and the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency.
Right. It requires strict conceptual soundness. You have to prove to the government that your model isn't a black box.
And the second framework they map to is the upcoming European Union AI Act, specifically Annex III, which deals with high-risk classifications for things like automated credit scoring.
And to comply with this, the architecture relies on agentic validation suites.
These are automated, programmatic tests running constantly inside the company's CI/CD pipelines.
Right, continuous integration and continuous deployment pipelines.
Basically, the automated assembly line where software gets tested before it goes live to the public.
Exactly right. Inside those pipelines, tests are running 24/7, checking for tool correctness, meaning, is the AI only trying to access authorized API endpoints?
Okay.
They also test argument correctness, ensuring the data the AI is trying to pass back and forth perfectly matches those validated primitive JSON contracts we talked about earlier.
So if the AI tries to use a tool it shouldn't, the pipeline breaks and the update never goes live.
Exactly.
But wait, I have a massive structural question here.
Okay, what is it?
If this system is constantly sending user requests back and forth to external vendors, like sending prompts to OpenAI or Anthropic to generate responses, how is that not a colossal data privacy violation under something as strict as the EU AI Act?
Oh, I see where you're going.
My actual physical bank account number is flying across the open internet to an AI company.
And that is where the real-time data DLP layer comes in data loss prevention.
Ah, okay. The architecture specifies using high-velocity rejects and localized NER models. Walk me through how those actually protect my data before it leaves the building.
Think of it like a digital sensor with a thick black marker. Before your prompt ever leaves the Klarna servers to cross the vendor API boundary.
Before OpenAI or Claude ever sees the text.
Right, this incredibly fast scrubbing layer intercepts the message. The NER models, named entity recognition models, are specialized algorithms trained purely to hunt down specific nouns.
Okay.
They scan the text looking for personally identifiable information, or PII.
So they are hunting for names, addresses, tax IDs, and physical banking card numbers. And the rejects.
Reject stands for regular expressions. It's hard-coded pattern matching.
So if the system sees three numbers, a dash, two numbers, a dash, and four numbers, the rejects knows that's a social security number.
The moment it spots that pattern, it literally swaps those numbers out for a generic placeholder tag, like bracket tax ID bracket.
Oh, wow.
The external AI model at OpenAI never actually sees your real sensitive data. It only sees the redacted placeholders.
That makes perfect sense. The AI can still read the context of the sentence without knowing my actual social security number.
Exactly.
But what if a user isn't just asking a normal question? What if they are actively trying to jailbreak the AI?
That happens.
Say, trying to trick the prompt into approving a massive loan they don't qualify for? Or what if a customer in the chat is expressing severe financial distress or suicidal ideation?
That triggers the final layer of the cage, the human-in-the-loop override.
Okay.
The architecture acts very much like a triage nurse in an emergency room. It's constantly monitoring the vital signs of the conversation. The second an adversarial prompt is detected, or the system spots indicators of extreme consumer vulnerability, or it hits a systemic compliance edge case, it initiates an immediate hard stop.
The improv actor is yanked off the stage.
Instantly. The system freezes the AI, it completely dumps the session logs out of the automated loop, and it routes the entire unredacted conversation history directly to a human operator.
So the AI is benched, and a human takes over seamlessly.
Exactly.
Let's pull all of these threads together, because the picture that emerges from this case study is profoundly different from the public narrative you read in the headlines.
It really is night and day.
The secret to this massive AI disruption isn't that someone invented a magical, sentient, perfectly infallible language model.
No. The language model is almost the least important part of the safety architecture.
The secret is this this incredibly disciplined and honestly unsexy deterministic engineering built all around it. It's the hierarchical routing that keeps the specialized line cooks separated. It's the vector semantic caching that mathematically intercepts queries to drive costs down to zero.
Right.
It's the strict ARAG contracts that prevent fine-tuning hallucinations and those automated reject scrubbing layers that black marker your data before it hits the internet.
The generative AI is really just a thin conversational veneer resting on top of a massive fortress of traditional hard-coded logic.
And there is a massive lesson here, no matter what industry you are in, whether you are building fintech infrastructure, whether you're managing a remote team, or you're just trying to automate your own daily workflows with AI tools you have to structurally separate your creative, flexible thinking from your factual, deterministic execution.
Absolutely.
You want the AI for its language skills, but you absolutely cannot rely on the intelligence layer to do the math.
You are building a system that fundamentally assumes the AI will eventually fail. The genius of the architecture is how it catches that failure gracefully without the user ever knowing.
Exactly. And that leaves us with a final, rather provocative thought to ponder.
Let's hear it.
If we look at the profile of the consultant who wrote this deck, Surya Kausanga, their highest level engagement, their tier 4 offering, is acting as a fractional chief AI and risk officer.
A role that sits precisely at the uncomfortable intersection of cutting edge capability and rigid compliance.
Right. And if the real breakthrough in enterprise AI over the next decade isn't actually the models themselves, if the language models just become cheap, commoditized utilities that anyone can plug in, but the true value is in these deterministic cages, the regulatory mapping, and the intense risk management built around them. It makes you wonder.
Wonder what?
In the near future, will the most valuable, highly paid tech jobs belong to the AI engineers who train the models, or to the auditors and the systems architects who figure out how to build the cages that keep them safe?
It's a compelling shift in power. When the AI improv actor becomes incredibly cheap and plentiful, the stage manager, the person who knows how to physically stop them from giving away the bank's money, suddenly becomes the most important person in the room.
It's all about the cage. Something to think about next time you chat with a seemingly brilliant customer service bot.